Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Colin's Edge right here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Colin Jove, coming to you live tonight from Toronto, Canada. Have a very special Monday night show with us tonight. My guest is none other than Mr. Frank Corbin. Frank's going to be talking about the 8 strategies to highly effective credit. Frank should be calling in any second now, and then we'll get right into the show. Hello, Frank, are you there? Hello, Frank. Folks, we'll be talking with Frank Corbin momentarily, and we'll get right into tonight's show, 8 strategies to highly effective.
I'm here, Colin. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Hey, Frank, welcome to Colin's Edge right here on Blog Talk Radio.
I'm Colin.
Yes.
Hey, Colin, can you hear me?
I can. Hello, Frank. Okay, folks. Frank should be calling in momentarily. Sorry about the delay. Should be calling in, and we'll get right into tonight's show. Just want to let you know, if you also have a chance, once the show gets started, feel free to comment in regards to tonight's show. Also, feel free to access the archives. We've got lots of shows in there for you. We have Dennis Kimbrough, author of Think and Grow Rich, a Black Choice, and a ton of others as well.
Hey, Colin. Frank here.
Hello. Hey, Frank. Welcome to Colin's Edge.
Oh, thank you, Colin. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How about yourself?
I'm doing excellent.
Good, good. Good to have you on the show. Good to have you on the show. I know you've got your upcoming book, 8 Strategies to Highly Effective Credit. And I know it's something you're all excited about. And you're having your book launch in a couple of days. And we're going to have you talk about that as well.
Absolutely.
And, you know, within the next hour, hopefully you can go through the steps that are required to help us all get that effective credit that we all need and desire.
Absolutely, Colin.
Good, good. Listen, what was the impetus besides you writing about, you know, that led you to write about the book?
Well, it's pretty simple. We live in a credit-driven society, a credit-driven world, and there's no one out there who actually educate people on how to deal or manage credit, how to establish themselves to actually get credit from the banks, or even make themselves credit worthy, where the banks would actually want to do business with you. Yet every step by step through the process, all day, you're being judged by your credit. So, at a very young age, walking to my bank, trying to borrow some money to start my first business, and my bank was someone, she says, Frank, we only lend people money who have highly effective credit. So I asked her, what is highly effective credit? And she says, when you have highly effective credit, the banks will lend you lots of money. So she take me through the step-by-step process how to establish highly effective credit, and over the years, I've generated a lot of experience in the credit business. So I started to teach people the same thing in my credit workshop, and I decided to write this book.
Great. And how has credit helped you in your business?
Well, when you're trying to start a business and you have no money, no income, no business partners, I had to develop highly effective credit. And once I established highly effective credit, I started to leverage the credit system, where I actually started borrow the bank's money and started to do business.
I see. Very interesting. Very interesting. Well, can you give us an example? Because we hear about a credit and good credit and bad credit. It's all over the place. I mean, most buses have a sign about, you know, needing debt help and let me get you out of debt and things of that nature. So what exactly is highly effective credit? Can you simplify it for us?
I sure can. Now, when you have highly effective credit, that means you have all the particulars that the banks are looking for in what they call the advantage or VIP clients. So they will literally lend you money at a very low interest rate. They actually will offer you mortgages, line of credit, and credit cards without even you asking them for it. That means your credit is in the right situation. Now, most people tend to interpret highly effective credit by your credit score. And it's more than just your credit score in order to have highly effective credit. It's your whole credit portfolio. What have you been doing credit-wise over the last 2 or 3 years?
I see. Very interesting. Very interesting. Because you know what? I tend to agree with you. You know, when I think of highly effective credit, I automatically think, oh, you know, you have a high credit score. You must have highly effective credit. To me, that was just default, right? It's just a matter of fact, really. But you know, I'm by no means a credit expert, so it's very interesting that you would say that a person can have a high score and not have highly effective credit.
That's right. A high score just indicate maybe you're paying your bills on time, and you probably have a couple of credit cards, and you're doing all the right thing. It doesn't mean you have highly effective credit, because the banks can still decline you if your whole credit portfolio is not in check with what they're looking for. I've seen people who came through my program who have an 800 credit score and they can't qualify to buy an investment property, whereas other folks who come through my program with a 680, 700, they get qualified no problem. So having highly effective credit is more than just your credit score. It's how your whole credit portfolio is situated.
Really? So yeah, that's very interesting, because there are actually cases that you know of where the person has a low credit score. I guess 680 is not too bad.
You're just about borderline. Yeah.
Wow. Wow, that's very, very interesting. Because you know, I would have thought, just looking at, you know, a paper, guy with 800, no problem. It's almost like a no-brainer to me. A guy with 680,
yeah.
You know. So what give me, Can you expand on that a little bit more? What would be the determining factor for a guy who has a score of 680 to succeed in terms of getting access to credit, where someone who has 800 is struggling?
Well, the guy who has 800, he can have maybe an income problem. He can have he would not be exposed to a lot of credit. That means he doesn't have access to a lot of the bank's money. So in that sense, where he has a high credit score, but he only have maybe 2 or 3 credit cards of $200 or $500 or even $1,000 a piece. So he hasn't been proven himself credit worthy. That means if I lend him $50,000, is he going to keep it in check, or he's going to destroy his credit based on the overexposure of credit? So a guy with 800 score with very little exposure for credit, the banks don't really trust him as yet. So they would not give that guy even a mortgage for $300,000 or $400,000. They would not give him a credit card for $10,000 or even $15,000, because he haven't proven himself yet. Whereas a guy with 680, he have a couple of cars under his belt. He have student loans. He have a mortgage. He has proven himself to be able to manage his credit properly. And in that case, the banks would want to lend him lots more money.
Wow, that's very, very interesting. Very interesting example. It's so unlike what I've been led to believe. So in terms of highly effective credit, would you say that the average person in Canada falls into that category?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
Most people, no, they don't. They don't. And the few people that actually falls into that category, it's just by accident. They just happen to do the right things and manage to fall into that position. But most people don't even understand how the credit system really operates and how it works. They don't understand what the banks are really looking for. So what most people tend to do is operate in apply in the blind. So they apply for a mortgage or a credit card or a loan, and they hope the bank will actually approve them. Whereas when you're educated on the credit system and you have highly effective credit, when I send in my application, I guarantee to get approved.
Guaranteed
to get approved. Because I understand what the banks are looking for. And I also understand my current credit situation. And once I know what they're looking for, I know exactly what to give to them. So approval is guaranteed when you have highly effective credit.
Wow. What you're saying then is the average person can almost have a predetermined system to determine beforehand that they will be approved.
Absolutely. Because it's pretty simple. You see, the banks don't operate as a secret agent. They don't do secret business. They have a very open, wide system, and it tells you exactly what you need to have as a client and what they're looking for. And all you have to do is match up your situation to what they're looking for, and approval is guaranteed.
Wow. That's a totally different way of looking at things. Because it almost, based on what you're telling me, it's almost as if the average person goes in to their banker, and it's almost as if they're blind, really. Because they go in there, and they're looking for a loan, and they're crossing their fingers and their toes, hoping that everything pans out.
Yes. And that's because they're not educated on the credit system. As I said, this is probably the first credit book in Canada. Of course, this book is also set up for Canada and United States. But it's the first credit book in Canada that's designed to teach Canadians in a step-by-step process and Americans how to establish what I call highly effective credit.
Really? And in terms of the two systems, I've heard people say that the Canadian system is stricter than the U.S., and I've even heard people say that there are two totally different credit systems out there between the two countries. What is your take based on what you've learned over the years?
They're not that much different. They're just minor things that makes them different, but it's not a total extreme different system. If you understand how to build highly effective credit in Canada, you can do the same in the U.S. and vice versa.
I was always under the impression that it was easier to get credit in the U.S.
That's because the
open competition with amongst the banks.
Right. So because there's more competition there, the banks, of course, there's lots more banks in the U.S. than Canada. The banks and financial institutions, they are literally fighting for your business over the years, the last 30, 40, 50 years. They're fighting to give you access to credit cards and line of credit so they can make money from you. Whereas Canada is a bit more of a conservative system, the banking system is a bit more controlled here in Canada. Of course, you have very limited access to banks. You only have 4, 5, 6 choices, maybe 10 if that much, out to the whole country to get access to credit. So Canadians are actually limited to exposure of credit.
Wow. So there's a difference. That's one difference. Are there any other major differences?
No, the other minor difference is the timeline that stuff would stay on your credit report, the timeline that bankruptcy would get wipe off your credit report. It's those are very, very minor stuff, but the actual credit building process. Keep in mind, the credit system came off of the FICO system, which started off by Fair Isaac and Company, and it's the same system getting implemented in Canada. It's just minor adjustment that makes them different. In the United States, we call them FICO, the FICO score. In Canada, we call it the Beacon score.
I see. And for those out there who don't know what the Beacon score is, can you explain it to them?
Well, the Beacon score or the FICO score is just a calculation results that the credit bureaus use after they have calculated all the exposure of credit you have and all the credit cards and line of credits and mortgages you have in your portfolio. So what the credit bureaus do, they have a formula that they put all these accounts into that formula, and based on the status and ratings of those accounts, they come up with a score, call it the Beacon score or the FICO score. And the banks or financial institution use that score as a reference whether to lend you money or not. But it's just one reference, okay, amongst the other things that they look at also, like your income, your employment, how long you had access to credit. These are the things they look at before they actually start lending you money.
Interesting. What's a good score to have? Like, you said before, 800, like I said, 800 I thought was pretty good. You said 680 is just a little above average. What's a good score to have?
Well, one of the things that I state in the book, when establishing highly effective credit, your target should be 775.
Okay. And
right.
Why so?
With 775, you above all qualifications that most lenders look for. Most lenders would approve you based on a 680, 680 and up, based on your credit score, amongst other things that they look for. But with 775, you way over that 680, 700 range, 750 range. You're pretty much good to go.
Okay. But not too long ago, you said that there was a guy that you know with 800 that struggled to be approved.
That's right, because, as I said, the credit score is just one factor that the lenders look at when they're approving you. So even though I'm telling you a 775 is a good reference, you can have 775 and still get declined. If your employment, if your income, if your exposure debt is low or too high, you can still get declined. If you don't pay your bills on time, you can still get declined. So the credit score is not something we should focus on a lot, because it's just one factor whether the bank's going to approve you or decline. There's a lot, like six or seven more other things the banks actually look at before they approve your application. So, but if a good reference would be the 775 and up.
I see. Okay, so it a good credit score helps, but it's not the be-all and end-all.
Exactly.
I see. A few seconds ago, you talked about bankruptcy. Can you expand on that? Tell us, when you have a bankruptcy, it takes you 7 years to recover. Is there any truth to that?
First of all, I normally advise most of my students that come to my credit program, never file for bankruptcy. Okay? So never file for bankruptcy unless you really, really have to. Okay, most debt that you owe to credit collectors or the financial institutions, you can negotiate them. So bankruptcy should always be a last option. Okay, now in bankruptcy, staying on your credit report, it stays, depends on what province you're in, depends on what state you're in, it changes from state to state, province to province, depends on what country you're in, it changes. In Ontario, it's about 6 years. In United States, for most states, it's about 7 years. Also, depends on what province you're in, bankruptcy can stay on your credit report up to 7 years also in Canada.
Wow.
So it changes. And in the book, we highlight what the length of time each negative or positive things would stay on your credit report for each province and each state. It's in the book there also.
I see. Okay. Okay.
All the information. Also, what kind of bankruptcy we talk? We're talking about Chapter 13, Chapter 7, Chapter 10. It's all different. Chapter 11. There's so many different levels of bankruptcy in the United States and also in Canada. So it depends on what form of bankruptcy we're talking about. It changes from state to state, province to province, on the length of time it stays on your credit report. But on average, we're looking at about 6 years and 7 years, and some bankruptcies stay up to 10 years also.
So you're saying that even if your situation is dire, you don't have to declare bankruptcy?
No, you don't. What most people don't understand, that the credit system is a forgiven system, okay? And that's why every 6 or 7 year, it doesn't matter how bad the credit situation is, if you don't pay your bill, those things automatically come off your credit report. So, because it's forgiven, it's not there to damage you and damage you for the rest of your life. It's just temporarily. It's just temporary to prevent you from accessing more credit within the short time frame.
That's interesting. So you're saying if you find yourself in dire straits, what's the next step? Call your creditors and tell them you want to renegotiate. Like, what do you do?
Call your creditors, call the bankers, sometimes you even call the government, and renegotiate your contract. Renegotiate the amount of money you owe. Renegotiate the interest rate that you sign off on that loan or line of credit or credit card. And even renegotiate the principal amount that you owe.
Can the average person do this?
Absolutely.
Wouldn't they need some assistance? Because, you know, usually people, when you think of the average Joe Blow, he realizes that he's in dire straits financially. He's pretty much stressed out. The last thing he's thinking about is he's thinking, wait a minute, the average person knows about bankruptcy. They hear about it. There's ads all over the place about it. They're not thinking, you know what? I can get on the phone and call my creditors and say, look, can you give me a break? That's, on average, they're not thinking that.
Well,
I need a consolidation.
Well, the average person, Colin, is just approaching it that way because he or she might not be educated of the credit system and how it really works. You see, once you understand how the credit system really works, it's very easy for you to approach it the right way. And that's what we teach you in the 8 Strategies to Effective Credit book.
Interesting. I know the book is being launched officially on Wednesday. Can you give us some info about it? Can you tell us how the person can access the book? Let's say I'm listening right now and I want to get a copy of the book. How do I do that?
You can go to our order website at gethec.com. That's www.gethec.com. You can also call our toll-free line at 1-888-88-REMIC. That's 1-888-88-REMIC. You can order the book there also.
Okay. And this is regardless of what country you're in, if you're in Canada or the U.S., you can feel free to go ahead and do so, correct?
That's right. The book also is available both in paperback and audio. So if you don't have time to read, you can listen to the CDs into your car and follow the step-by-step process how to establish what I call highly effective credit.
Excellent. And also, in terms of, let's say, you know, I live in the Toronto area and I want to come down to the book launch on Wednesday. How do I do that?
The book launch is going to be at the Yorkland Hotel. That's at 185 Yorkland Boulevard at the 440 Shepherd, close to Fairview Mall. And we're going to start there on Wednesday evening from 6 p.m. all the way up to 10 p.m.
Okay. And it'll just be the great big launch. And you know, will there be a book signing? Like, what exactly will be taking place?
There'll be a book signing. We'll be showcasing the TV infomercial that aligns itself with 8 Strategies to Effective Credit. There'll be a lot of folks there networking, different business people, investors, networking. If you come out, bring a lot of your business cards, bring a couple of friends with you, get ready to network of people in different industry, different business, and we're going to teach you how you can network and establish credibility so you can start doing business. Not only having highly effective credit is good, also building your personal credibility is also good when you're doing business.
Folks, I just want to remind you are listening to Colin's Edge right here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Colin Jobe, and I got my special guest with me tonight, Frank Corbin of REMAC, and he's talking about his brand-new book. It's going to be released within the next couple of days, 8 Strategies to Highly Effective Credit. Also, folks, the chat line is available as well, so if you have any questions, feel free to send us a comment or a question via the chat line. And also, if you want to call in, you're welcome to do so as well. Our number is 347-838-8683. Once again, 347-838-8683. Frank, let's talk about, there are a lot of myths about credit. What are, in your opinion, what are the most common myths that the average person out there has about credit?
The number one myth you're going to hear everywhere is, if I pull my credit too often, my credit score will drop. Number one myth. So what most folks do, they stay away from learning or even pulling their credit to see exactly what's there. Now, if you don't know what's there, it's very difficult for you to apply with confidence. So what I tell folks is you need to know your credit score, number one. You need to pull your credit report at least minimum 2 to 3 times per year. Because you need to know what's on that credit report. Especially if you're an active person applying for credit.
Interesting. And is there a particular time of the year that you should pull your credit and there are times that you shouldn't? Or does it doesn't matter?
It doesn't matter. Anytime you can pull it. The easiest way is to go to the credit bureau's website, Equifax.com in the U.S., Equifax.ca seems to be the most common one, or FICOScore.com in the U.S. And you normally pay about $20 or $19, you get access to your credit report, and always buy the one that gives you a credit score. You want to know what your credit score is doing. Is it increasing? Is it decreasing? It's a good reference for you to know how to gauge your credit report and your credit status on your credit report.
Okay. And I also understand there's another company besides Equifax as well here in Canada.
This TransUnion. And in the U.S., we also have Experian. So in the U.S., we have Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax. In Canada, we have only TransUnion and Equifax for the consumer's credit report.
Right. And so, but do you, is there a difference between the two? Is there one that you favor over the other? What's better for the average person out there?
It's not what's better. Is depends on who you getting access to credit from. Most creditors use Equifax, and some creditors use TransUnion and Experian. So Equifax is the most popular one, but when you check in your credit report, I would advise individuals to check all the credit reports from all the credit bureaus to know exactly what's going on with each bureaus.
I see. Okay, so but it's definitely your best bet is probably to go with Equifax since that's the more popular of the two.
No, actually, your best is to go with all of them.
Go with all.
All of them. You want to know what every credit bureau out there have on file for you. They all have an account that's developed for you, and you want to know what's on that credit report. So you want to know what all of them have on that report on you.
And tell me something. Is it possible that you could pull a credit report from two different sources and have two different bits of information on the report?
Absolutely. Two different set of information, different set of score. One credit bureau can have you as a high score, the other one can have you as a low score. And that's why you need to know what every credit bureau have on their profile for you. Here's an example, Colin. Let's assume you apply for three credit cards with three different banks. All three banks send a report to Equifax. Only one of them send a report to TransUnion on you. So TransUnion, your report on TransUnion would be very, very low, whereas Equifax, you get a high credit score. So you want to know what TransUnion have on their report for you. Now, when you go to borrow money from a bank or another institution, they're going to pull all the reports, the one from TransUnion and Equifax. Now, they're going to start questioning when they see TransUnion score is low and Equifax is high. That would affect you from getting access to credit from that new institution.
Really, and that's very interesting. So in essence, if for example the merchant pulled from both, they could end up looking at both credit. They're looking at both credit scores, two different scores.
Yes.
That could be a determining factor as to whether or not you're approved there.
Yes. Some creditors would go with the highest one. Some creditors would go with the average of the two. Or some creditors just would decline you.
Oh really?
Oh yes.
Wow. So it's critical to get copies of both then.
That's correct. Get copies of all of them, whether two or three. Get copies of all of them to see what each credit bureau have on file for you.
Wow, that's interesting. That's very interesting. I would think that given that most places that would grant you credit would be pulling the credit from, say, Equifax, they wouldn't be concerned with what TransUnion has. So they would probably just go to Equifax, pull that, take a look at that, and say, hey, you know what, we've got this. This person's got he's got that 775 magical score. He's paying his bills on time. Let's give
it's you want to know what everyone has. And here's another example, Colin. You can file for bankruptcy, and after 6 years or 7 years, that bankruptcy has been erased off your Equifax report, but it's still on the TransUnion report. Now, you keep applying for new credit, and every creditor keep declining you. And you say, well, what's going on? My credit score should be zero. My credit is I start rebuilding credit with Equifax. My Equifax score looks good, but I keep getting declined. And here's what's happening, Colin. TransUnion have not deleted your bankruptcy off your report after the 6 or 7 years has passed. So new creditors continue to see that bankruptcy in that report and always declining you. And that's why you want to know what every credit bureau have on their profile for you.
That's very, very interesting. let's say that's a really interesting example. Let's say you've retrieved both copies of the report, and as you said, Equifax, you're fine with Equifax, but you're not with TransUnion, or vice versa. And then you realize, you look at it and say, wait a minute here, TransUnion still has my bankruptcy judgment on the record. And you now realize that should be removed. Is there a way you can, what's your next course of action? What do you do to get those records rectified?
Oh, just send them a letter. Send them a letter, which is what we have also provided in the credit kit. And say, listen, I filed bankruptcy. My bankruptcy have closed XYZ date, and it's been X amount of time. Please remove this incident or this transaction off my credit report. And within 30 days, it's normally gone.
Look, you make it sound so simple.
Because it is simple. It is simple, Colin. The thing is, most people don't do it. They just don't do it. Ask the average person, what's your credit score? And they were not able to answer you. Ask them again, do you know how to read a credit report? Most of them would tell you no. And it's so easy to read a credit report. It's so easy to get your credit score. It takes one click of a button online, and your old credit report and your credit score would appear in front of you.
But when the bureau receives your letter,
mm-hmm.
what is going to cost them to take action to rectify that? Because they're going to say, everyone tells us that. Everyone tells us they've got good credit.
Right.
It's not
whether you have good credit or bad credit. Once you tell the bureau that this incident has passed and it should be removed from your credit report, the credit bureau will start what we call an investigation process to investigate that information is correct. Now, you know you filed for bankruptcy and you've been discharged. You then provide the information of discharge to the credit bureau, and they will, after their investigation, will remove that information from your credit report. And if the investigation proven that the information is incorrect, then it will remain there.
Okay. So once it's been removed, will they send you an updated version of your credit report at that point in time? What happens next?
If you ask, you can ask for an updated version of your credit report, and they normally will send it to you within 30 days or less.
Interesting. This is really mind blowing stuff, because like I said, you would think the average person would think that would be a real gutsy move to call up the credit bureau, because most people, let's face it, most people are intimidated by them, right? And all the things that they've heard, it's not the sort of thing that would inspire that warm fuzzy feeling, right? That it's more like a scared intimidation, deer in headlights kind of feeling. And they wouldn't be normally be inclined to say, you know what? I'm going to take them on. Here's the situation. I know this is a fact, but as I said, I guess after reading your book, they'd be encouraged to take some action.
Well, the first thing I tell everyone, you need to understand how the system works, and that comes from education, and we provide lots of education in the book. They need to apply the strategy that we're going to teach you in the book, and it's that simple. You see, most people don't understand how simple it is to get access to low-interest credit. They don't understand how simple it is to get access to the credit report, because no one out there is teaching people this stuff. Yet every living day, you're being judged by your credit. Your insurance premium in some states can be judged by how good your credit is. Okay, whether you get a job or not, it can be based on your credit report. Some banks, even the government, for some government position, they will not hire you if you have a bad credit report.
Really?
People are literally paying, overpaying hundreds of thousands of dollars in high interest credit cards because of lack of credit education.
So you're saying that people are overpaying on their credit education?
They're overpaying on the credit cards. Yeah.
How so?
Well, here's an example. The average person walk into a bank, and the first thing they ask the banker is, how much money can you lend me? The banker says, sure, we can lend you $20,000 at 19.5%. They say, thank you very much, sign the dotted line, and they walk out. We don't operate that way. We're going to teach you that when you walk into a bank, and if the bank even want to lend you $1 million, your first question should be, how much is going to cost me to borrow that money? So people never ask about the cost of borrowing the money. So literally, whatever the banks give them in normally high interest rate or average interest rate, they just sign on the other line and walk out.
Wow. This is a totally different perspective you're bringing to the whole credit process. Because it's more, I guess, you're functioning more from a predetermined, enlightened approach versus the traditional, we go in there, you know, and we hope for the best.
Listen, Colin, it's pretty simple. The bankers are not your friend, okay? They're not your friend. Bankers, they're not your enemy either. The bankers are there running a business, and their business is to generate more revenue for the investors, the people who invest in the bank stocks and the financial stocks, okay? That's their business. So it's not to their best interest to give you a credit card line of credit at the lowest interest rate. Unless you know how to negotiate or ask for a lower interest rate.
I hear you. And so let's talk about what causes bad credit. And what are the normal, based on your own research, the normal situations that lead to a person's credit?
The first thing that start to make your credit course drop, the number one thing is over-leveraging your credit. That means borrowing too much money. Okay? That's the first thing. Now, and not only borrowing too much money for personal liabilities, because I believe in borrowing a lot of money from the banks. Borrowing them for personal liabilities. That's the first thing. The second thing would be not paying your bills on time.
Okay. And when you say borrowing for personal liabilities, what do you mean? Just
Borrowing money and going on vacation, expensive vacations, and buying expensive cars, and going shopping, buying fancy clothing, and all this kind of stuff. Borrowing too much money for the wrong reason.
Okay. And so what should people do? Because I know a lot of people would say, I haven't taken the vacation in 5 years. You know, I don't want to save up another 5 years before I go. But, I can put $1,000 on my credit card, and boom, I'm off.
Well, $1,000 is not too bad. It's when you have $40,000 or $50,000 on a credit card in debt and you can't afford to pay. That's the problem I see in my credit course.
there are people out there that you've encountered that have $40,000, $50,000 on their credit card?
The worst I've seen is $700,000 in unsecured credits, all line of credit and credit cards. The gentleman had over $700,000 in unsecured credit. He had over 43 credit cards, and credit lines, I should say.
$700,000?
That's right.
He could have bought a franchise.
He could have bought multiple franchises, Colin. And on average, it would go from $60,000 to $160,000.
On credit cards
and line of credit. It's and having access to that kind of money is not a problem. I say if you have access to that kind of money, use it for business. That's why in my credit book, I teach you how to get access to over $400,000 in unsecured credit as a person, as a single individual, and you can double that if you have a spouse.
So if you have a spouse, you're saying you could teach the average person how to get access to $800,000 worth of credit.
As a couple.
Yes, exactly.
Right. And $400,000 as a single person. Over $400,000 and also over $800,000. Very, very simple steps you need to follow.
Okay. And I guess those steps are outlined in the book.
It's all outlined in the book. And one thing people must know, Colin, is never, never apply for credit with your spouse.
Excuse me?
Never apply for credit with your spouse.
So, are you saying to apply separately, or?
Yes, apply separately. Sorry, go ahead, Colin.
Really? But that flies in the face of conventional wisdom.
Well, it's pretty simple. When you apply for credit with your spouse, the two becomes one. So the bank's actually going to limit the amount of money they're going to lend you as a family or as a couple. Whereas if you apply separately, they look at you as two different entities. And the ability to lend you money is going to be maximized on an individual level.
That's very, very interesting. Because you would think, most people would think, you know what? If I team up with my spouse, I'm in better shape than I would have been otherwise.
No, you're not. Also, if you apply for credit with your spouse, after a short time frame, your credits start a write-off of each other. So if one spouse start establishing bad credit, it would affect the other spouse with good credit also.
Interesting. You know, earlier on you talked about overexposure to credit. And can you elaborate on that? What exactly is overexposure to credit?
When you have too much money to your disposal, when you have maybe $400,000 plus, $500,000 in unsecured credit, then you overexpose. The banks now become very afraid of you because they think now that if you decide to use up all that money, your income would not be able to pay that money back on a monthly basis. So you become a bit more of a liability to the bank versus an asset at that particular time.
Why would the bank put you in that position in the first place?
Because they are hoping that you would borrow, use a little, pay them some interest rate, or some interest on top of that money, and pay back on an ongoing level, on an ongoing scale. But over the time of establishing highly effective credit, you can easily rack up or get access to over $400,000 in unsecured credit within a short time frame. And this is why I'm telling folks that it's easy to get access to the bank's money. Just don't use it for personal spending. Use it to start businesses. Use it to do investments. Stuff that's going to make money, bring money back into your pocket. I have folks that use line of credits and credit cards, and they buy businesses. The average business costs you about $25,000 to $30,000, Colin. And the average credit card, you can be up to about $50,000 per credit card. So literally, you can buy two businesses on one credit card.
Do you know anyone who's ever bought a franchise on a credit card?
Not a franchise, particular,
or
but businesses, of course. I mean, if you're getting a credit card at 7-8% interest rate, even up to 10%, that's not too bad if you use it for business, because you can generate anything from 30-40% a year return from your business.
But where you just said credit card with an interest rate of 7%. Where do you find those?
In all the banks. Each one of them has that. But you got to know exactly how to get access to those low-interest credit cards.
Because I've heard that the average credit card, the interest rate is 17% and above.
It's actually 19.5% on average in Canada. But you want me to tell you a secret, Colin? I've never held a credit card in my wallet since 1994 of 19.5%. Everything is being below that. 11%, 12%, 7%, 5%. And that's including line of credits and credit cards. Same thing. When students finish reading my book, the highest credit card they would be able to have access to should be 11%. Nothing more than that. If it's more than that, it's too much.
That's interesting because, you know, a lot of times with a lot of students, that's when a person is a student, that's the first exposure they get to a credit card because, you know, all the banks are after your business. They figure you're going to be working within a year or two and they want to grab a hold of you while they can. And which is, to me, seems kind of silly because they're offering you a credit card. Most students don't have a full-time job. They may have a part-time job, but to me, the likelihood of them running into trouble is pretty high. So, you know, why would the banks pursue somebody who is at that point in time in their lives likely to be a bad debt.
Well, as I mentioned to you, Colin, the banks are not your friend. The banks are a business, and they're there to make money. And their model is by any means necessary. So if they're going to give a student a credit card at 19.5%, and he's going to take it and pay it back temporarily, and they might default a couple of years after, and they already make all their money back. So they're happy with that, and they continue to do the same process over and over again. At the same time, the bank is not your enemy. You can use the bank system and leverage and make yourself very, very wealthy. So when I talk about the banks, I'm not against the banks. I'm pro-banks. I'm pro-banks lending money. I'm pro-banks giving people access to cash and capital. And people need to understand, people need to educate themselves on the credit system. So rather than we, as an institution, target the banks and saying, please don't give these kids money, we should be targeting the parents and said, won't you please educate your kids on the credit system so they can make financial decisions in the right way.
I hear you. But do you think most parents are in a position to do so? Because
absolutely.
We've talked so far. Most of them probably they don't know. Other than having experience themselves, they don't really... What do they know about the credit system?
Well, I have a book now. It's called Eight Strategies to Highly Effective Credit. Every parent should be giving the kid access to this information at least by the age of 16 so they can start learning this stuff. If you can give your kid a driver's license book to read, they should start reading about credit at the same time too, because they need to buy a car in a couple of years from now. They need to buy get access to a credit card, land a credit in a couple of years from now. And they need to be fully educated on the credit system before they get access to that credit card or student loan or any form of access to credit. It's only about education.
At the age of
16.
You're saying they should learn before they even leave high school.
That's right. If you can drive a car or learn to drive, you should be learning about credit. Because just as much as a drive-in is important in this country, credit is way more important than actually drive-in.
That's interesting. That's extremely interesting. I've never heard anyone speak about credit in that manner. And I've never heard of anyone suggesting that 16-year-olds should learn about credit. I think you're right. I think the earlier the better. But
yes.
Most people seem to learn about credit once they have problems.
And then most times, I won't say it's too late, but most times they become desperate and they make all the wrong decisions at that particular time.
Interesting. Once again, can you tell us about your book and how the average person listening tonight can get access to it, and also touch on the upcoming book launch on Wednesday?
It's called 8 Strategies to Highly Effective Credit. They can pick up a copy on getheck.com. That's www.getheck.com. It's available in paperback and audio. So if you don't have time to sit and read, you can actually sit in your car or on your iPod and your iPhone, all that fancy technology gadget out there. You can actually download it and listen to it there. We're launching the book on Wednesday, the 31st in North York, starting off at 6 p.m. at the Yorkland Hotel. And that's 185 Yorkland Boulevard. Again, to get access to the book is www.getheck.com. You can also call my office at 1-888-88-REMIC. That's 1-888-887-3642.
Excellent. So based on what you're telling me then, the average person has a ton to learn about credit.
Sorry, come again, Colin.
Based on what you've been saying so far tonight, you're saying that the average person has a lot to learn about credit. Because I would imagine, and I haven't done any research or anything, but you definitely don't learn about it in school, in high school or in college or university. And most of us just go along, hoping for the best. And for some it pans out, for others it doesn't.
That's right. So with the right education, I think people will make better financial decisions. And especially when it comes to credit, as we outline in the book, it's a step-by-step process. It's an easy read. The book will teach you how to repair your credit if you have bad credit. If you have no credit, teach you how to rebuild your credit. and also teach you to get the rewards from the credit system. We get access to the bank's money, and we teach you how to increase your credit intelligence and access over $400,000 in unsecured credit. It's also going to teach you how to negotiate with credit collectors, okay, in a step-by-step process. Now, if you want access to capital to start a business, this is the book for you. What a lot of people don't understand, Colin, is that when they want to start a business, most folks will tell you to get yourself access to a business plan. So you went and spent $5,000-$10,000 to develop a business plan, but if you don't have any money, banks do not lend money based on business plans. They only can lend you money if you have something on the table. So if your business is going to cost $100,000 to put together, the bank wants at least 25% to 30% coming from you. By establishing highly effective credit, you don't need to have a business plan to get access to the bank's money. They would lend you the money just based on credibility, which is your ability to pay them back.
Right. So you're saying that's the focus. That's what they look for.
Yes. If you have highly effective credit, the banks will lend you hundreds of thousands of dollars. Very, very simple. Now, I always going to recommend you use that money to do business. Start a business that can pay itself back so you can pay back that money. Don't use it for personal liabilities. So what I'm teaching in this book is how to leverage the credit system in a positive way, not to use it to destroy yourself or put yourself in a worse situation that you're actually in right now.
Interesting. No, it's really informative what you're saying, and it's really refreshing because, you know, we don't hear a lot about it. When you walk around, you look at most buses, they talk about, you know, debt consolidation, things of that nature, but nobody talks about, you know, very rarely do you see a lot of credit repair. What do you say to people who say that debt consolidation is a form of credit repair? Do you agree?
Yes and no. Depends on what they're doing. Most of the things that the debt consolidation and debt, all these debt programs will do for you, you can do it for yourself right in from this book. They're not doing anything special for you. You can do it all for yourself by reading the 8 Strategies to Highly Effective Credit book.
But most debt consolidation, all they do is they can combine your debts and pay it off. So isn't that a good thing because you're consolidating?
What people don't understand, someone cannot give you a consolidation or loan if your credit is bad. Okay? So the debt consolidation company can't give you a loan if you have bad credit. So what they normally do, Colin, is they normally take a low monthly payment from you with very high interest. And on the back end, what they're really doing is negotiating with all the people that you owe. And they put you on a payment system to pay them back over time. Now, you can do all that yourself. Okay? You can do all that yourself by just accessing the 8 Strategies to Highly Effective Credit book. And that's what we teach you here in a step-by-step process.
Interesting. You know, because it just seems like I said, most people... so they would say, I don't have the discipline to do it on my own. So they go to somebody else who sort of instills the discipline in them, right?
And well, the thing is, if someone's going to do it for you, there's a high cost. So you're going to pay thousands of dollars to these guys to do it for you. If you're going to do it for yourself, all that money is going to stay into your pocket. So you decide.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. Folks, we've just got a few more minutes left. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to send them via the chat line or give us a call at 347-838-8683. Once again, 347-838-8683. Our guest tonight is Frank Corbin, and he's talking about his new book, 8 Strategies to Highly Effective Credit. And so is there a credit situation that can't be repaired?
No. Every credit situation could be repaired, every single one of them. What people don't understand, credit is just a contract, and saying I owe you note. I owe you X amount of dollars, and I agree to pay you minimum X amount per month at XYZ interest rate. And unfortunately, something happened to my credit, my situation that I can't pay anymore. So that's what gives people bad credit. So you can go back to that creditor and renegotiate what you actually owe.
Interesting. But then again, you hear these stories of guys, i.e. like Donald Trump, who borrow millions upon millions and millions of dollars, get themselves into trouble, and somehow seem to be able to regroup and get back on track within a couple of years. How do they manage to do that?
Well, first of all, they don't have personal credit. It's what we call corporate credit. So with corporate credit, if you just bankrupt the company, it never affects you personally.
So you're saying
so it's easy to start over again, yes.
Even after a situation such as that, they're still in good shape.
Yes, because their personal credit situation never gets affected. It's corporate credit. Most times they establish.
So banks are still willing to loan these guys money even though they've shown an inability to repay it.
That's right. Banks understand that business goes bad. And that's why the credit system is so forgiving. The credit system is designed to help people to develop wealth. North America is the only place on the planet that you can come from anywhere in the world and start off with zero and become a hero in a short time frame. And that's afford you through the credit system. I mean, anywhere in the world you come from, in 6 to 8 months, you can have highly effective credit, or even less. And you can start buying businesses from $25,000 to $30,000 and start making yourself a lot of money. And that's how easy the credit system is.
So you're saying it's easy if you understand it.
Exactly.
Wow. I guess the next thing is for us all to get a copy of the book and try to understand it as best as we can. This, as I said before, and I don't mean to sound like a broken record here, but this flies in the face of conventional wisdom because, you know, you hear all these stories and the overwhelming majority are negative. And when you hear these stories, you know, you hear, oh, you know, John Mill went bankrupt and it took him forever to get back on his feet. You know, don't do that. With the exception of the millionaires, of course. But it's really refreshing and enlightening to know that you can take advantage of the system once you become knowledgeable. And
yes,
it's really interesting. Actually, frankly, we have a caller. Let me just get to the caller. Hello, your name, and then the city you're calling from.
Hey, it's Mo calling from Toronto. How you doing, Colin?
Hey, Mo, how are you doing? I'm good. Good.
Yeah, well, I missed most of the beginning. I just got here. I was just wondering if he had a chance to address basically the situation where real estate is now pretty inflated in Toronto, and it's really expensive to buy real estate. So some people are using credit, and they're using outside. Now that you have the 20%, is he addressed? I didn't know if he's already addressed. I guess just over leveraging and anything of that nature.
Right. Right. Okay. Not a problem. Frank, did you hear Mo's question?
Yeah. Thank you very much for your question, Mo. Mo, exactly. Were you talking about actually using credit and buying real estate?
Yeah, like basically, you're going to use credit to buy real estate anyway. The government has just changed the laws where you need a true 20% to, qualify to buy places. I missed, like I said, the beginning of the call, so I'm just asking if you addressed, I guess, certain things relate to responsible credit and what these people do when they can't actually come up with a true 20% anymore and the credit markets are tightening.
Right. We've just got a minute,
let me just answer you real quick. Yeah. The easy way to do it, Mo, if you're going to use credit to make up your 20% down to buy real estate, you just want to make sure that the property that you're investing in is actually making positive cash flow, and the positive cash flow will be able to pay back the money that you borrow. If it can do that, then you over-leverage yourself and you can get into financial problems.
Yeah, okay. That's not quite the question, but I'll accept
okay.
That. Just, son, you're out of time.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks for your call, Mo. And feel free to go back and listen to the beginning of the podcast.
Okay.
Great. Thanks.
Bye.
Okay.
You're
thank
welcome.
You.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Well, we've just got a few seconds left, Frank. Once again, can you tell us about the upcoming event? We just got 10 seconds left, so quickly tell us about the upcoming event.
Yeah, on Wednesday, March the 31st at 6 p.m., we have the Yorkland Hotel at 185 Yorkland Boulevard, and we're launching the 8 strategies to have effective credit book there. Feel free to come out, bring a few friends with you, bring a lot of your business card to do some business networking. You can also get access to the book at getheck.com. That's G-E-T-H-E-C.com.
Great. Thanks, Frank. Appreciate it. Very informative hour, and I hope our listeners did as well, and we'll be in touch. And I'll see you come Wednesday.
Thank you. See you then, Colin.
Take care.
Bye now.
Thanks. Thanks for listening to Colin's Edge. And look for us once again on Blog Talk Radio. Take care, folks. Thanks for listening. Have a good night.